With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Sticks in the Six podcast. Here are your co-hosts, Andrew Forbes, Peter Barachini, and Alex Hopton.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 139 of Sticks in the Six. I'm Andrew Forbes here with my co-host Peter Barachini, and Alex Hobson will be joining us shortly. You guys killed it last week. I watched the entire episode, and you guys absolutely crushed it.
I am back
this week, and I'm looking forward to talking a little hockey with you guys. Before we get into all the fun hockey talk, Peter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good. Yeah, I know. I'm glad that you said that we killed it, because, you know, obviously, you know, we usually try to do all three of us, but you know what? Circumstances pending or whatever. First of all, I just hope everything is okay with you. And that, yeah, you know, a little bit of nerves. We were getting the lowdown on how to do the process a little bit, so we know the ins and outs right now. But yeah, you know, I'm doing good. Can't complain. Halloween is at an end right now, so no more horror movies, no more listening to Ice Nine Kills repeatedly. For those that don't know, they're a band that does a lot of horror music or soundtracks with like heavy metal influence. So, you know, still listen to them. They actually came out with a song that's based on Silence of the Lambs, so that was been on repeat. But yeah, no, we're in November right now. Things are starting to heat up, especially in Leafland right now, where it's never a dull moment, as we usually say.
That's right. Well, I got my dad tax for Halloween candy this year. It's upstairs in a nice big bag. So the bonus of having kids, and I'm sure that's going to duplicate next year when Harlow starts her trick or treating career. So it's going to be
double the candy income, I guess.
That's right. It's the dad tax, my friend.
There you go.
Normally off the top of the show, guys, I do mention that we are presented by the Indie Ale House. We are still presented by the Indie Ale House. They are re-upping for this coming season, which is great. We're happy to have them along for the ride. We do have some big news coming out on that end as well, and hopefully we will have that to you very shortly. We're really looking forward to it. It's a great opportunity for us, and it's a great opportunity to build our partnership with the Indie Ale House. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be lots of content regarding them and ourselves on all of our socials. So make sure, if you're not already, subscribe to the YouTube channel. We're closing in on that century mark. I'd like to get there sooner than later. Check us out on Twitter and Instagram as always. And make sure you hit us up on TikTok as well, as we're going to kind of pump some stuff on the TikTok channel as well. And if we get to 1,000 followers on TikTok, we can always throw some lives up on there as well. So be sure to check us out there. As for myself, like I mentioned, the kids went out trick-or-treating last night. It was a lot of fun. Oakley had it set that he was going to be a Triceratops for about 6 months. So little man went as a Triceratops, and he actually picked out his sister's costume, and she was the cutest little lion I've ever seen. So that was good to see as well. But
that's a good big bro right there.
That's a great big bro. Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful. But yeah, it's other than that, things are going well on this end. We're just kind of hunkering down, I guess, for the winter season coming in. And obviously, those that live in Ontario saw the snow start last night, so that kicked off, and we're kind of heading in that direction, which is great for hockey season. So what better way to kick off our hockey talk than talk a little snow? But let's get into some league-wide news. We'll kick it off first with Paul Stastny retiring from the NHL after 17 seasons. I want to get your take on Paul Stastny, what your thoughts are on his career, and could this guy be a Hall of Famer potentially?
It seems like whenever a player retires, it's like, is he a Hall of Famer? Doesn't really quite have all the accolades, but he has medals internationally. So I think he does have like that going for him as well. But overall, you look at the numbers that he has, 822 points during the regular season as sort of like a two-way center, playmaking pivot up the middle of the ice, and over 1100 games. And that's no easy feat too. And when you go back and forth with like multiple teams, because like Colorado, Carolina, the Blues, Jets, and Golden Knights, he was all part of them. He had a tremendous impact on every single one of those teams. And I mean, don't know for sure about a Hall of Famer, but he had a fantastic career as like one of the top two-way centers. And as his career got a little bit deeper, he knew what his role was going into each game, sort of that veteran presence, still being a secondary scorer. And yeah, definitely a great, great player on the ice. Wish him nothing but the best in retirement at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you guys kind of know where I stand on the Hall of Fame and believing that, sometimes it's too easy to get in, especially when it comes to the Hockey Hall of Fame. That said, 822 points in 1,145 career games. He's a guy that definitely was a leader on a lot of teams that he played for. Like you said, the Colorado Avalanche kicked off his career. He was there till 2014. Then kind of a journeyman after that, a couple stints with just one stint with the Hurricanes. I don't know what I was looking at there, but I do think that, he's a guy that definitely would, you'd have to take a deep, deep look at if you want to look at, whether this guy's a Hall of Famer or not. Obviously his dad's a Hall of Famer, so that kind of brings into the question.
The lineage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That said, if you look at his numbers, NCAA championship in 2005, NHL All-Star team in 2007, played in the All-Star game in 2011. So he does have some accolades going for him. That said, I don't think that by my standard anyways, he would be a Hall of Famer, but certainly a storied career and a guy that definitely helped the teams that he played for. And as you mentioned, here at Sticks in the Six, we wish him all the best in what comes next for the latest Stastny to retire from the NHL. So great career, excited for him to enjoy his retirement, and all the best to Paul Stastny as I'm sure he'll stick around in the hockey world as most of them do now. Along with that, I want to talk to you about the NetGuard debate, and we're going to talk about it now because I know Alex mentioned prior in our Slack channel that, he doesn't have a whole lot to say surrounding the intent, I guess, the conversation of intent when it comes to the unfortunate tragedy that happened in the EIHL and Adam Johnson obviously passing away. So we send our condolences to his family, his teammates, his friends, all of his loved ones. 29 years old is way, way, way too young to go, especially in that fashion as well. But outside of the perplexing commentary on the intent of the other player to actually, kick his foot out and slash a player's neck with his skate blade. Let's get into that neck guard debate because junior hockey, I remember playing even in lacrosse when I played competitive lacrosse, it was always you had a neck guard. It was just part of the equipment. You had it. There was no question, no if, and or but. And if you didn't wear it, you were off, right? I know the Penguins, I saw a piece that the Penguins have instituted in their AHL program, their ECHL program. Obviously, Johnson played for the Penguins, so there's a little bit more of a relationship there when it comes to that. But your thoughts on neck guards and where they stand in the realm of professional hockey?
Yeah, I don't want to get too much onto the intent as well, because we don't want to give that portion of people creating dumb storylines an outlet. So we are not going to do that. I do agree that the important debate about NetGuards is, you know, one that should be had. And you know the phrase, like, you shouldn't have to implement something until until death has to happen. This is what that situation is. And we've seen too many close calls in the past. We saw with Clint Malarchuk in the 80s. We know what happened with Richard Zennick. Both managed to, you know, were lucky to stay alive, because let's face it, that is a very serious area. And when, like, a little piece of blade comes up and cuts your throat, you're thinking worst case scenario anytime that happens. And it's something that needs to be had with, you know, bringing NetGuards in. Obviously, the NHLPA and the NHL are already, you know, in talks about initiating, having that discussion with the Players Association, which is great, but it seems like a little too late now that one player had to die as a result of it. You know, Haley Wickenheiser has come out speaking about it. Not just the Pittsburgh Penguins, but the Boston Bruins, the Providence team, they've already had three players wear neck guards in their game. The Washington Capitals are even starting to implement something in the minors. And like you said, minor hockey is a must wear neck guard. Junior hockey, it's a must. International play for, you know, juniors, it's a must. I'm so perplexed that it took this long to try and bring this discussion up, because you already implemented visors. You're already bringing in, like, cut resistance wear for, like, Achilles and wrists after what happened with Evander Kane. To me, when you're playing, obviously your necks, your wrists and everything does get a little bit exposed because of the equipment. But what's the one thing that always stands out that's always visible on the ice? Your neck. That is the one thing.
Unless you're Thomas Plekanec.
Yeah, because he had that sort of, like, turtleneck going on. I don't know, like, what the material was, but at least there was some sort of protection, kind of. But, you know, if the most important area of your body that has, like, the whole main arteries and veins is exposed like that, and this is going at a fast pace, why isn't that protected? I have always been a proponent of wearing a neck guard. I've always had it in junior, even when I got out of playing, like, league hockey and it was still, like, you know, recreational. I always wore my neck guard because this is an important area of your body. I'm glad the discussion is having right now, but I'm disappointed that it had to happen after the events that happened with Adam Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest question for me is, like, at what point did everyone just kind of look back and say, like, yeah, now's the time that we don't need neck guards. Like you mentioned, yeah, like through junior, through international, like, mm-hmm, there's always been that institution that, you know, you need the neck guard. It's part of your equipment. That's just the way it's is. Standard. And
yeah,
there at some point. I
remember referees kicking players out because they didn't have their neck guard, or the neck guards were not on properly.
Yeah. And at some point, en route to professional hockey, it was like a unanimous decision that you no longer wear neck guards. And it just, mm-hmm, it, like you said, it's unfortunate that it took the events that it did to get the conversation rolling. And by no means does this mean that it's going to be instituted league wide. At the end of the day, it still has to come down to, you know, the NHL and the NHLPA coming to an agreement when it comes to that. But I think, like, knowing what we know now and seeing what happened, I don't know if you watched the video of the incident. I did because of the debate that was going on. And I mean, that it's a freak accident. Like, there's nothing you can say about it. It's a freak accident. The fact that happened is awful. It's such a tragic thing to happen.
It's such
an easy fix that it shouldn't even be up for debate. It should be mm-hmm, something that's talked about immediately and something that's instituted immediately, and something that moving forward, like, there's no need for any other discussion about it. Like, that's, you know, it's a simple solution. And I will quickly note that on the topic of the discussion of intent, guys like Chris Terry and guys like Sean Avery, you know, at a certain point, just shut up.
Yeah.
Just shut up.
You're not helping anything.
You're not. And to say that there was intent there, especially Avery, and then coming out and saying, you know, but he didn't wake up and think that he was going to murder somebody.
what's the point of the conversation now?
Yeah.
What's the point?
Again, you're not doing yourself any favors and you're not contributing anything, not necessarily positive, but you're just making matters worse.
No hockey player goes on the ice and purposely kicks his foot up, knowing damn well that they have a blade on their skate. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's even a conversation is asinine. I think at a certain point, like, somebody needs to come up and say, like, for these guys, they just need to shut their mouths and move on with it. But yeah. Welcome to the show, Alex. We decided to have that conversation kind of without you here because we knew that you didn't want to really get into the intent side of everything. We've kind of said our piece about neck guards. Anything you want to add about the neck guard debate?
Yeah. So obviously the neck guard debate, I'm not going to add anything that I'd imagine you guys have already talked about. Mm-hmm. It's the easiest possible measure and the easiest possible measure the NHL could, and not just the NHL, but leagues around the world can take. And if that's not enough evidence, we've talked about the close calls before. If that's not enough evidence that there needs to be mandates in every league, then I don't know what is. I mean, I don't know how you get worse than death. And then, yeah, Andrew, it wasn't so much the intent that I didn't want to get into. It was, I didn't want to shine light on the fuckbags who are trying to take this and turn it into a thing that it's not. Mm-hmm. Because we've talked on the show before about, you know, calling out homophobia and calling out racism in the game and stuff like that. I'll tell you right now, I have not once, when we've talked about issues before, when we talked about the Logan Mayu issue, and, you know, there's obviously going to be people on that end who are, you know, who are vouching and, you know, calling cancel culture and things like that. The people who defended Jacob Panetta when he did that monkey thing for mocking Jordan Subban, I have, like, all those people suck, but I have never seen anybody as heartless and as just plain shitty people as the ones who are trying to make this into an issue and try to paint Matt Petgrave as a criminal.
Yeah.
And the point that I was trying to get at is I've never in my life seen anybody be so openly and blatantly racist over something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when it gets to a certain point when those people are all talking in their own echo chamber, and I think that we're generally served better just by letting them talk to each other and letting them drown each other out in their own sound, because it's a tragic situation. And the fact that people, to begin with, whether they think it was intentional or not, the fact that people are taking this fucking video and sharing it over and over and slowing it down, analyzing this poor guy's death. Like, I just don't.
What other aspect of life do you do that? Right. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. What's the need for it? Like, I often hate how much the general human race can take something that I think deserves privacy and deserves kind of time to marinate on its own and make it everybody's business, if that makes any sense. That's what I meant, Andrew. I mean, yeah. Obviously it sucks because even if there was a place to debate whether or not there was intent there, it's now been completely hijacked by all the pieces of shit who think that Petgrave only did it because he's black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I said I didn't want to get into that topic, just because, you know, we call out shitty behavior on this show, but sometimes I think it's just best left to people who are participating in it, because the people that are doing that are just, they're so far beyond fucking evolving into human beings. I just, you know, what are we getting out of bringing them, shining light on them? Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And with that, guys, let's jump over to another topic that kind of, you know, it's going to bring back a little bit of a conversation we had in the past here, but the Ottawa Senators just fired Pierre Dorion after 8 seasons in which the team went 225, 261, and 65. And my guess is that it's coming at the hands of this punishment that the NHL has handed down, where they will lose a first round pick in either the 2024 draft, the 2025 draft, or the 2026 draft, which they are able to say which one they want following, like, shortly after the draft lottery takes place, so they know exactly where they're picking. A lot of conversation right now around the severity of this this punishment because of the blown Dadonov trade that we all remember back at the trade deadline, where, you know, papers didn't get filed in time or what have you, and there was just a lot of miscommunication within the organization. A lot of the conversation is comparing this to the punishment that was put forth for the Chicago Blackhawks with obviously the sexual assault allegations and what happened there. I don't want to get back into the Chicago discussion. You guys can touch on it if you want, but Alex, I'll throw it to you first. A first round pick for a blown trade compared to what we've seen the NHL in past situations. I guess I'm just wondering, you know,
I think we all know the answer.
Yeah.
You know, all I'm going to say is that we're talking about the same league that apparently didn't tell Michael Andlauer that about this situation before he bought the team. It's like, I feel like if there's a guy who's about to drop billions of dollars on something, you should probably disclose that kind of information. But sadly, I wasn't shocked at all because the NHL doesn't shock me anymore. Just whatever happens, happens kind of thing.
Peter, your thoughts on the first round pick, Pierre Dorion gone, and maybe how it compares to past punishments for other teams and their questionable moves.
I think it was just a matter of time before Dorion, you know, probably got the axe because, you know, there were some questionable moves. And with this whole Shane Pinto thing, obviously unrelated punishment because of what happened with him. But first it was that, then there was this. And it seems like communication is not the best quality if you're working in the Ottawa Senators organization at this point. Because if you want to be on the same level, you got to, like, you know, lay everything out on the table. What's happened in the past, what happened recently, especially for Andlauer, because he is the owner right now. And the fact that he didn't know about this is a bit shocking, but then again, it was in the news about the whole like trade with issue with Anaheim and Dadonov. And then he ultimately Dadonov going to Montreal as well. So there was that issue, but I mean, yeah, it's just comical at this point. It really is. Not just for the Senators, but like the league itself, because, you know, if like this is the punishment where all the team got was a fine for what happened with the Blackhawks, and we all know what happened there, it really is a joke at this point.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to I don't want to get into the Blackhawks specifically, but I'm going to say that I'm not shocked either. And I no longer blame the Department of Player Safety for its inconsistency, because obviously the inconsistency is it has a trickle down effect from, you know, top to bottom. So we saw that the Devils give up their first round pick for the Ilya Kovalchuk BS that happened. We barely saw anything happen to the Chicago Blackhawks for the sexual assault allegations. In fact, they got Connor Bedard out of it. And now we see a first round pick from the Ottawa Senators. If there's any debate that Gary Bettman doesn't want a Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup, here's a perfect example, because just as you have a team that's up and coming in the Atlantic, and obviously don't take this season and kind of throw it out the window. I mean, they've had a bunch of crap happen to them, but this team was on the up and up. They lost Formanton, and we'll leave that up to your imagination on why you think he's not with the team any longer. Shane Pinto's gone for 41 games with no real answers as to what exactly he was betting on. You know, and really with the betting culture that's out there right now, if you're not betting on your own team, I don't see a problem with you betting, period. And then of course you've got this going down now where a first round pick is lost. Now you're talking about a team that seems to be more in shambles than they were to lead the year. We haven't heard from Sean Simpson on Twitter recently. So, I mean, that's maybe the one benefit that's coming from all of this. But like I said, nothing surprises me either. I think the inconsistency in the NHL, and you go back to the Pride tape as well. And them rescinding that almost like what within 2 weeks. So, shout out to Travis Dermott on that one as well. Yeah. So, I just, it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't shock me. Guys on the note of Shane Pinto betting, why not a quick word from our fine hosts at DraftKings?
Oh my God. those jokes.
That's the best. That is the best segue you've done to date. Jokes. Best segue you've done to date, bud.
It was perfect. The NFL season is going strong, boys, and DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking new customers up with an offer that's even stronger. Bet $5 on any game this week to score $200 instantly in bonus bets. And DraftKings isn't stopping there. All customers can take advantage of a sweetener offer every game day this October. You can check them out now on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Take a look at maybe what our Leafs are looking at against Boston in the on Thursday. Check out the line on that one. Get in on the game day greatness. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. New customers can score $200 instantly in bonus bets when you bet $5 on the NFL. That's code THPN only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, licensee partner Golden Nugget, Lake Charles, L.A., 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See sportsbook.draftkings.com/football terms for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. I mean, if you want a line, I'm sure you could probably call Shane Pinto as well. Maybe he's got some good picks going forward. Let's get into some Leaf talk because the Leafs haven't exactly looked consistent this season. We've seen some bright spots. We've seen some not so exciting parts of their game as well that hopefully they can kind of shoo out in the next couple of weeks here so that we can get on track. But one of the brightest spots has obviously been Joseph Woll. Establishing himself as a starter really has stolen the show from Ilya Samsonov. And I'm not sitting here writing Ilya Samsonov off, even though I did write that piece about how the Leafs could move Samsonov. But I will say that Joseph Woll is coming into his own. He's 25 years old. We know the stat on goaltenders tending to establish themselves a little bit more as their careers go on and as they get older. He is one of the more recent homegrown goalies for this organization that comes to mind when you're talking about potential starter skills. Peter, your thoughts on Joseph Woll so far? Obviously didn't get the win last night in LA, but where are we heading with this guy?
Yeah, it's kind of funny that in the two losses that Wallace played in, he got absolutely no help whatsoever. Like the Maple Leafs looked actually flat-footed. Like last night against the Kings, the game against the Hawks, I don't know what, first off, I just don't know what's wrong with this team and starting on time. That still seems to be an issue, but overall, like you can't fault last night's game on Joseph Woll because he made a lot of high danger saves or like high, like, you know, four alarm bell saves that, you know, kind of kept this team in there to try and give him a fighting chance. And that's what you need to do right now. And you kind of saw that a bit from Samsonov against the Predators, a much better outing from him. But it seems like momentum and confidence is more on Woll's side than it is on Samsonov because he still has to elevate his play. No matter when Samsonov's next start is, he's got to improve on that Nashville one. That's going to be critical. I think Woll has looked great up until this point. He, again, kind of got no help against the Washington Capitals, but the Maple Leafs got timely goals, stood tall against the top team in the Dallas Stars. And, you know, the Kings are not like, you know, a team that's like mid-tier below the standings. They're a really good team up the middle and they got depth. So, I mean, yeah, you chalk it up to a game where he showed up, but nobody else did. But the fact that he's getting that, the confidence and the opportunities continuously more so often, it's got to go well for him because, you know, kind of like what we had last year, you know, we said that Samsonov could take over the starting role from Murray. Now the roles have reversed and Woll is doing the same thing to Samsonov right now because Woll wants to stick here. He wants to be a starter and the stats are showing it. High danger saves percentage, 5-on-5 save percentage. He's doing his job.
The one thing that Nick Kypreos has maybe ever said that I kind of back him on is that there is a reason why the Leafs didn't sign Samsonov to a long-term deal. And yeah, this could potentially be the reason for it. small sample size, 16 games played in the NHL through three seasons, 12-4 over that span with a 223 goals against, 929 save percentage. This season, he's 3-2 in five games, 189 goals against, 942 save percentage. Alex, what say you when it comes to Joseph Woll?
I say that there's a guy here that the Leafs need to treat as someone, just like I said about Matthew Nyes last week, Peter. The Leafs have a goaltender here that they need to treat as a starting option. And, you know, I'm kind of in a tough spot because part of me is like, give Joseph Woll the reins and let him run until he gets cold. But I do think that the Leafs still need Ilya Samsonov. And I think that a lot of fans, and I understand it because, you know, the Leafs have had so many goalies in the past couple of years that they've struggled to watch even stop one puck. You go back to the days of Michael Hutchinson, Jonas Enroth, and then you get to the more modern day versions of Jack Campbell, Matt Murray, Peter Mrazek. Like, there's been a lot of instances where goalies have just been so bad they can't make a single save. So given that Ilya Samsonov has looked like that to start the year, I understand where the skepticism and where the fear is coming from. But people forget that this guy has done so much more good in Toronto than he's done bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right now, absolutely, I'm in favor of giving Woll some more starts and evening out the load a little bit instead of kind of making him the 1B to Samsonov's 1A. But they're going to need both goalies down the stretch. And, you know, I understand that there's an argument to be made. Like, you say, I know you wrote that article about trading Samsonov, Forbes. And there is an argument to be made about Martin Jones being in the minors and him being he won 27 games in the NHL last year. I'm sure he could be a fine backup. But I think it would be better if the Leafs had two solid starters instead of one solid starter and one fine backup. So that's kind of where I stand on the whole thing. That said, I think that Woll should be getting a lot of the starts until he cools down. I'm not counting that game against LA last night. It was a rough game for him, but like you said, Peter, I was at the first game that he didn't get any help. I was at that Chicago game, and both games, it was the exact same. They were sloppy. Mm-hmm. They couldn't complete a pass. Woll got nothing. So in the end, I'm in full support of both goalies getting looks and getting more even looks, I should say. But I don't think that Samsonov should be on the way out just yet.
Yeah, no, and in writing that, like I do agree with you. I think in today's NHL, you need the platoon of goaltenders. You need to have that secondary option. And I know the arguments being made about Martin Jones being a possible option, but at the same time, you have to look at his numbers realistically. And I mean, he's a guy that, 27 wins, but when it came to his save percentage was well under 900. So
yeah, it was one of the worst in the league. I think it was like 884, not 884. Mm-hmm. That's a little low, but I think it was comfortably below
93 or something like that. It wasn't well enough that you want to look at it and look at it and say, like, you know, this is a guy that could potentially be our starter if Woll goes down at some point this season. And just with Woll's, you know, injury history, you kind of do want to keep a secondary option in Samsonov and allow Samsonov to kind of find his footing. Like right now, he just doesn't have his footing. And I think we saw what he could do. It's not a issue with the goaltender per se. I mean, you look at his career numbers, he was good in Washington as well. So, he is an option. I think the Leafs need to look at that and really divide it, you know, more evenly and kind of look at what their option is come playoff time. But
I think it's as simple as running using the ratio of two games, one game, two games, one game.
Yeah.
And then if the goalie playing one game, one out of every three games starts playing noticeably better in that one game than the other goalie does in the two, then swap it, give the other goalie two games and give the other one. So
One more final point on Jones right now. It's funny that you brought up his save percentage because in two games with the Marlies right now, he has two wins, but 897 save percentage, so just below 900. And that was the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you look at guys like Woll, he's what, first in the league right now in goals save above expected. I believe like Samsonov, they were showing the other night, was 69th in the league, but small sample size given what he's played this year and the way the team's played in front of him as well. So and he had one of the best last years. If you look at last year's numbers, he was one of the best in the league. Yeah. So I think you take that into account as well, and you know that you do have two very capable goaltenders on your hands, and that's kind of what you want going into the playoffs.
You guys remember back in like 2014 when Jonathan Quick went down with that injury, and Ben Scrivens just went on an absolute heater for the Kings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Scrivens got injured, and Martin Jones came up and went on an identical heater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What a weird year that was.
That was
insane.
That's why Nothing's important.
Was that a Daryl Sutter Kings team though?
Yeah.
So,
they win the cup that year?
Yeah, 2014 they did.
Yeah. Wow. Anyways, boys, Joseph Woll seems like the option right now. Let's talk about another guy that the Leafs need to really take a close look at in William Nylander. I almost said Alex Nylander. I don't know why he's on my mind. But
William, you're looking at me.
Yeah, must be. William Nylander, new franchise record for most games, most points. Sorry.
Longest point streak to start a season.
Most longest games. Points. Sorry, I feel like I keep interrupting you and throwing you off. Most games in a row with at least 1 point to start.
That's right. Yeah, that's kind of where I was going, but it could be said easier as longest point streak to start the season at 9 games. Has been one of the obviously the most consistent players for the Maple Leafs off the top of the season. Alex, what are your thoughts on William Nylander, where he's going with this, and are we looking at maybe another career season from the Swede?
Let me just say that if Sheldon Keefe keeps playing William Nylander on the penalty kill, Brad Treliving needs to fork over whatever reservations he has right now and just sign the man for what he wants. Because if he takes another step forward offensively this year and adds a little bit of defensive prowess into his game, I mean, man, you're looking at another Marner at that point, basically. And I mean, I know obviously they're different players. Nylander's a little more balanced offensively, and Marner is significantly better defensively at this point in time. But I mean, it's just every game that goes by, Nylander just continues to light it up. And it's just, it does really, I know we've dwelled on this enough in the past, but it does put into perspective how funny it is looking back at, you know, all those fans that wanted to trade him and wanted to literally dump him for a bag of pucks just because he held out for the first couple months of that 2018 season. And I'm not including you in that, Forbes. I know that you wrote a couple articles of those yourself, but I'm talking about the Dave and Ajax types who are like, trade him for Mike Komisarek and shit like that.
Calling into the Andy Frost show.
Exactly. The Fan 590 post-game. Oh, God. Dear Lord, man.
Those are fun times.
I remember listening to that show every time I went to a Leaf game with my dad. I say that like I went to Leaf games frequently. I didn't, but every time I would go to a game with him, he'd turn on the post-game show for the drive home, and I just remember sitting back there like, oh, my God, man.
Like, Welcome to Leafs Nation.
Anyways, yeah, I think that Nylander should be paid as soon as possible. And I think he's at a point now. He said all the right things, and he said he doesn't want to play anywhere else. And I know we've talked about this. That's different than I like playing here. I like being in Toronto. Like, I don't know. I feel like there's enough desire from Nylander to stay in Toronto. And if Nylander's got that desire, I think that Treliving should do whatever it takes to get him signed. And, you know, I still think that Nylander is enough of a homegrown boy where maybe I'm not going to say he'll take a hometown discount, but I don't think he's going to try and milk the Leafs for every penny that they have at this point, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Peter, your thoughts on William Nylander's play thus far this season and the contract situation?
Never mind pricing him in outside or like in that $10 million range. He's trying to like earn that Austin Matthews money at this point with the consistency. I mean, like, hat tricks aside, Matthews has hit a bit of a slump right now, but, you know, he's getting his chances, but Nylander is getting the points. He's producing, and that's not to say that Matthews is worth a $13 million. Get that out of your head. But, you know, this is what you want to see, and, you know, one of your top players continuing to be the top players and carry the load when other top players aren't. Can't be said for the bottom six or the secondary scoring, but at least Nylander is the bright spot for right now. And he's on pace for, because we love those stats this early on in the season, for 118 points. And obviously that would smash the career season that he had last year, points, goals, assists. But yeah, no, this is at a point now where he's definitely not fazed by the contract situation. He's playing to his potential and he's playing to what he's worth right now. And they were talking on the broadcast yesterday, like, you know, Nylander was outside the top 50 players or not, or just inside like around 40, 48 range. And they were saying that he should be in the top 15, top 10, top 20 at this point right now. And lo and behold, he's definitely playing like a top 20 player in this league. So yeah, good on him. Good for not letting this, you know, overshadow the season right now, because the Maple Leafs still are, you know, trying to figure things out. But Nylander isn't one of those players that's trying to figure things out, because we know what he's capable of at this point.
I'm also going to add to, not only is he on the penalty kill, he's got 7 hits so far this season. 11th on the team in hits. So, I mean, not the most physical player, but a guy that's definitely trying to add that to his repertoire and
more engaging this time.
More engaging. And that's something that everyone asked for after they saw him at the World Championships playing for Sweden. Mm-hmm. He was throwing the body. He was tightening up around the boards. And I think you're getting to see a little bit more of that from Nylander as well. So that's going to add another element to his game as well. So something to keep in mind as we move forward and see him play the rest of the season. But before we go on here, boys, another word from a returning sponsor, Raycon Headphones. And with the busy season coming up, all the holidays and the Christmas shopping and all that kind of fun stuff, it may be too early to start decorating for the holidays, but it's never too early to start your holiday shopping. Why not take care of it now before the crowds and packed calendars make shopping a total nightmare, especially when you can get some of the best deals of the season well before Black Friday. You can shop Raycon products right now and save up to 50% off because their early Black Friday sale is going on right now. You've heard me talk about Raycon's products before, their comfort, how cheap they are, and what sound quality they have. Raycon first made a name for themselves in the audio space with products like their everyday earbuds, known for delivering high quality and thoughtful features like a 32-hour battery life and a perfect in-ear fit for all-day wear and lasting comfort. And this past year, they expanded their entire business with the introduction of Raycon Home and Raycon PowerTech. Their 5-star reviewed Magic 180 cable allows you to charge iOS, micro USB, and Type-C devices 8 times faster with 100-watt power delivery. Their faucet filter ultra filters the water in their tap against chlorine and heavy metals. It's a must-have for ensuring the water you use to wash your face and brush your teeth is, you know, actually clean. Raycon is known for delivering high-quality and thoughtful features at half the price for other premium tech brands. It's no wonder their products have raked up tens of thousands of 5-star reviews. To get everyone in the holidays shopping spirit a bit early, Raycon is currently offering 20% off everything on their website with select products up to 50% off. So beat the crowds and save now. Trust me, you do not want to miss out on Raycon's early Black Friday sale. Hurry now to buyraycon.com/THPN to get 20 to 50% off site-wide. That's buyraycon.com/THPN to score up to 50% off Raycon products. Buyraycon.com/THPN. Well, boys, I mean, interesting. They're getting into the water purification.
I was going to say, I wasn't expecting that part of the read.
No. Obviously, got to read over the ad reads before we get going here. I think of Ray J, and all I can think about is, you know, I mean, we won't get into that. But, anyways, last couple notes here before we close it out. Summer additions, and this is a big topic right now. Tyler Bertuzzi not really reaching his potential at this point. Max Domi certainly not reaching his. John Klingberg, another question mark as well. Peter, where are these guys going right now? We're just seeing the build up to chemistry, or are we seeing some guys that are just struggling in a new place?
I mean, at one point, you can't use that, you know, trying to build chemistry and struggling in a new place because we're already going to be at 10 games into the season. At some point, they should, you know, be comfortable with the new team, the new system and everything like that. But yeah, it just seems very, you know, lackluster. It seems like one player stands out one game and then goes quiet the next. Like Klingberg had that amazing, you know, block at the blue line leading to Bertuzzi's goal against Dallas. Domi and Nyes got the scoring started in that comeback win against Tampa Bay. Reeves had those two fights, but has kind of gone quiet in terms of, like, you know, not necessarily the physicality, but just, you know, chirping and getting into the face of the opponents, aside from Corey Perry. But yeah, it seems like at some point they got to figure this out and they got to turn things around, because they were brought in to, you know, have a new mentality with the grit, the snot, piss and vinegar. Klingberg being more reliable as an option on the power play. He got taken that off yesterday against the Kings. Roddy was back on PP1. And Domi himself, like, he's getting assists, but some of his decision making is off. Bertuzzi isn't producing, but his underlying numbers are, you know, pretty good, whether he's in the top line or in on the second line with Tavares and Nylander. So I think with him, it's only a matter of time. He's been the one bright spot, I think, that he's gone consistently game by game. But yeah, at some point, those new additions have got to turn it around and step it up a bit, because you can't keep relying on your same four players. They were brought in to try and alleviate some of that pressure, especially Bertuzzi and Domi with the production-wise. Domi doesn't have a goal. Bertuzzi only two. Klingberg, we're getting a little bit, you know, dicey with his offensive game as well, and the high risk type of player that he is. We're seeing that evidently right now. I say all four players have definitely got to find a next gear and, you know, elevate their play.
Alex, one of the things that I think some of these players feed off of is engagement on the ice. We're seeing Reeves, obviously, with his Halloween comical act in the U-Haul box in the hallway, kind of getting into it with teammates as well. But how much do we need to see these guys take that engagement with their teammates off the ice and bring it onto the ice, kind of maybe add to that physical play, get themselves more involved in the game, and maybe that can turn into some more offensive production?
All I'm going to say as of right now is that it's October, and I hate to be the it's early guy, but honestly, like, and maybe this is just coming from the perspective of someone who was a fan before I was a writer / podcaster / whatever you want to call me. But watching this team do the exact same thing every year in October, especially the past couple of years in October, the script has literally been the exact same. Mm-hmm. I can't be bothered to overthink it anymore. Honestly, like, I'm at a point where if we get to the end of November and Bertuzzi and Domi and Klingberg and Reeves we're still talking about the same things we're talking about right now for those four players, then yeah, shit's gonna, like, we need to figure something out. But ultimately, the Leafs actually had a better October than they did in last year or the year before. And everything that's been said about the new acquisitions is valid. I mean, you know, Tyler Bertuzzi, I'm convinced that he's working through an injury or something, because he just hasn't looked himself yet. Mm-hmm. Max Domi.
But he still looks good.
Yeah.
Despite
the injury. He does look good. Yeah. He just, the points haven't been coming.
Yeah.
Max Domi, I think, has been, I mean, he's had his good games and his bad. You can see there are instances where he wants to get his team into the game, and I think he's still kind of trying to find a home on the team. John Klingberg, I've been a big defender of his, and I think that, you know, I was honestly on his side and, you know, pushing for the positives of bringing in a guy like that and improving the defense on the back end. But I will say that if we're looking at a guy whose defense is so bad that he has to be sheltered on the first pairing, and then it gets to the point where I don't even know if this is going to happen, but if he gets removed from power play one and the Leafs are paying $4 million for a guy who's on the bottom pairing and not contributing that much offense, especially on the power play, I mean, it's going to be really hard to justify his position on the team and his role. But that being said, October, I'm willing to give these guys more than 1 month before I can say with confidence that they're an issue. And Reeves, it's honestly just a matter of doing what he did in the first two games. Like, that's literally all there is to it. I guarantee you, had he dropped the gloves once between the second game of the season and last night's game, I don't think anyone's talking about this, because no one cared about Reeves' numbers the first couple games. He was just as bad on the ice against Montreal and against Minnesota in those first two games as he has been for the other seven games that they've played. Difference is that in those first two games, he was throwing his body, he was hitting everything that moves, and he was fighting. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's brought here to do. We've seen the tough guy experiment fizzle out with a number of guys in Toronto. I was willing to give Reeves a chance, because he has established his reputation as a tough guy for the past 10 years, or the entire time he's been in the league. And I think he's more of that type than I think Simmons was, or even Kyle Clifford was. But it hasn't been there since the second game of the season. So I need to see more from him. But again, I'm going to keep falling back on the fact that it is October and it's early, and the Leafs do this every year. Honest to God, guys, like I tweeted this out today. What do the Leafs have in common right now that they had in 2022 and 2021? One goalie out of the two that's really struggling. 2021, it was Mrazek. 2022, it was Murray. 2023, it's Samsonov, right? Every year in October, we're talking about Mitch Marner and how he hasn't found his game yet. Never finds his game in October. The fourth line is doing cardio. The fourth line did cardio last year. You really think that fourth line of Albe, Kubel, Aston Reese, and Kampf put in work last year? Like, so you see what I mean? Like, it's the exact same. It's not even just this team has struggled in October. It's the exact same struggles every single time. And every single time they've rattled off a fucking nine-game win streak in November or something like that. And all the fans abandoned every single worry that they ever had and that they voiced in the month of October. So, you know, I guess the long story short, ask me again how I'm feeling about those guys in November, because again, if it's anything like last year, they're going to go on a heater in November, and they're going to erase a lot of the concerns that we've had since then.
Well, there you go. Clip it. It's the same story. We've got the same author writing October for the Leafs Nation every single season. How much do you guys like me personally? I think Domi right now is falling into this agenda that he's supposed to be the Domi that plays in Toronto and you know, following in the footsteps of his dad. As much as he doesn't want to, he's kind of had that shadow kind of hanging over him since he signed. So I think that plays into it too. I do agree that Bertuzzi's fighting something. He's just not looking the same. And you know, Revo is going to be Revo. I think we're going to see him come along. After all, when it comes to the Hockey Podcast Network, my team name in the hockey pool is Revo's Rippers, and I stand by that. I'm 3-0 right now going into week four. So, guys, before we close it out, Leafs Bruins, big game on Thursday. Bruins are, again, exceeding expectations. How important is this contest for the Leafs, even though it is October? Alex, I'm going to throw it to you first, buddy.
I think it's a pretty big statement game. You know what? I don't think it's a game that if they lose, they're going to miss the playoffs. And if they win, then they're going to win the Stanley Cup. Like, I don't think it's one of those. I don't think it's a super measuring stick game per se, but it is a big opportunity for the Leafs to, you know, throw that game against the LA Kings in the fucking garbage and just revamp, regroup. I also see a lot of people penciling this in as a guaranteed loss. And a lot of people seem to forget that, you know, just because the Leafs got manhandled like four straight years in the playoffs by Boston doesn't mean that they're bad against them in the regular season. The Leafs are 4-2-0 against Boston in the regular season. So these past 2 years, I should say. So I think that they could come out and play a good game. I do think it is relatively important because Boston's had a pretty easy schedule for the first month of the season so far. And they haven't lost in regulation yet. So if the Leafs could be the first team to hand them that regulation loss, I think that'd be great. But we'll have to see. All I know is that regardless of what happens, there's going to be overreactions.
Peter, no Charlie McAvoy for this game. He was suspended for 4 games for his hit to the head of Oliver Ekman-Larsson. What are the Leafs looking for on Thursday night against the Boston Bruins?
Take advantage of the situation. I mean, they're out their top minute eater, top defender on the back end right now. You know, they're getting goals, you're getting contributions, but it seems like they're relying heavily on their top players. The star players need to hand it to and dominate the bottom six of the Bruins. And it's funny that Alex brought it up because it kind of feels like a repeat from last season. They went 0-3 on that California road trip where, you know, lost to the Sharks, the Kings, the Ducks, came back, beat the Flyers, and handed Boston, I believe it was their first regulation loss of that season when they went on that absolute like stretch of, you know, just dominating the Eastern Conference or dominating their games last season. So now's a chance for them to turn the page on a bad loss against a California team and look forward to the next game, because you can't have that same performance from LA against Boston, because they are very, very similar in terms of their play style. Being quick along the boards, you know, you know, closing gaps, getting in and breaking plays up. They got to be aware of that, and they got to come out flying.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you guys more. I think right now is a perfect opportunity then for to take a win. I think October, November, December, January, doesn't matter what month it is. When you're playing a divisional game, you want to take home the 2 points. Home ice advantage matters. We've seen it in the playoffs the last couple of seasons. And with that, gentlemen, I think Thursday night's going to be a fun game to watch. It's going to be a big game. I think the Stars need to shine for the Maple Leafs and Nylander. Let's see if he can make it 10 games in a row to start the season. Otherwise, gentlemen, anything else you wanted to add before we close it out for the week?
It's October. Relax.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is so early, but, you know, take it by stride. Let's do that game by game kind of thing. I'm going to be, you know, like a head coach and say, we'll take it game by game.
Well, we may forget about this game come April. Don't forget to hit us up on all of our socials down at the bottom there. YouTube, make sure you subscribe. Make sure you subscribe. Takes 2 minutes out of your time to go subscribe to our YouTube channel. It helps. It benefits us. It allows us to bring you a lot more content. As I mentioned, stay tuned. We got some big news coming out from one of our sponsors. We're super excited about this. It's going to be great. It's going to be a long-term, hopefully a long-term partnership as we move forward. Otherwise, check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for lots of content as well. As always, you can follow myself at Andrew G. Forbes. You can follow Alex at A Hobson Media, and you can follow Peter at P Barrichini. Until next time, boys, that's it for us here at Sticks in the Six.